This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Making Cities Work. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. All of us city dwellers try to carve out an existence in this gritty, fast-paced space. And that doesn't just mean humans, but also mice, rats, and mosquitoes that live in our parks and buildings. And in some cases, those creatures are adapting or maybe even evolving to make cities work for them. Alan Yu has been looking into this, and he's here now to talk more. Hey, Alan.
Hi, Mike. And it turns out that us humans have created this artificial city environment. And animals are adapting to better survive here. So one of the things that I learned is that country rats are not the same as their cousins in the big city. And I dragged you to a dark, musty basement in Northeast Philadelphia to do some more research and maybe see some rats.
Yes, and that was not my favorite thing, honestly, because I hate rats.
Well, but it was fine because we were following someone who kills rats for a living. We were following the pest control expert Charles Evans. But even I could tell that rats had been living in this basement. It smelled like pee, you could see faded paw prints on the wall, and it did not take long to spot a rat.
There he is.
The rat hopped down a broken pipe and scurried away. Charles says rats thrive in cities.
They're animals of prey, everything wants to kill them. You know, human beings, dogs, birds, everything wants them dead, so they're great survivors.
And Mike, and these city rats, and some mice too, have developed a taste for the finer things in life.
What do you bait them with?
Peanut butter, Slim Jims, Nutella, different things.
You give the mice Nutella?
We give the mice Nutella.
That seemed to throw you off.
I was surprised because Nutella is expensive. I don't even buy Nutella most of the time. I buy like the generic hazelnut spread for my kids.
Right. Well, I'm not sure if the mice can tell the difference between brand name Nutella and generic Nutella. But it turns out that when mice live off human food, that changes them too. A study of mice in New York City found that they have shorter teeth than country mice and that their genes are different. Jason Munch himself is a biologist at Fordham University and was part of that research. He says that mice living in New York City parks generally get cut off from other mice, stay in those parks, and over time become distinct. The researchers are still sorting out what those genetic differences are linked to, but they can tell them apart under a microscope.
You could give my lab a white-footed mouse from a park in New York City. We could bring it back to the lab, look at a few segments of DNA in their genome and tell you what park that mouse came from.
Jason studies rats and mice, but he says there are a lot more examples of animals adapting.
The rise of contemporary cities has occurred just in the last 100, 150 years, and it's a process that's actually accelerated recently. So you're going to see a lot of cases of rapid evolution that are associated with urbanization. And, you know, some of the cases we talk about.
In San Juan, Puerto Rico, there are lizards with longer limbs and larger toe pads, and that could help them run faster on metal and concrete. And in New Bedford Harbor in Massachusetts, which is highly contaminated with industrial waste and heavy metals, there are fish that can actually live in that really polluted water.
Some people have called it unnatural selection because it's selection that's applied by the activities of humans.
Some animals have already evolved. That means there hasn't just been a genetic change, but that change helps them more easily survive, and the animals pass on those changes to the next generation. This kind of evolution actually happened to mosquitoes in London. In the late 1990s, researchers were studying a type of mosquito that normally lives above ground. Some of these mosquitoes branched off to form new populations in the London Underground. These subway mosquitoes became genetically distinct. What the researchers found was a new kind of mosquito that some called the London Underground mosquito.
It's evolution in action.
Entomologist Laura Harrington says similar underground mosquitoes have also been found in the New York subway. She's a professor at Cornell University and has also studied how these mosquitoes adapt to cities.
It's a biologically fascinating question, but also an important public health question.
This specific kind of mosquito, when they live above ground, the wild types, they transmit West Nile virus, but they usually prefer to feed on birds, so humans aren't bothered by them. But the ones that went underground have adapted to feed on mammals, that means rats, and us. The New York City Health Department says it's pretty rare, but when these different forms breed with each other, you could get mosquitoes that not only transmit West Nile virus, they also like to feed on mammals.
Right, and they're above ground where they're coming in contact with people.
So I guess we kind of inadvertently then, by having a hand in creating the below ground type, we've kind of created a type of mosquito that is worse for us.
Yeah, we're good at doing that sort of thing. The next step really in the future is about bringing collaborations together with scientists who understand the mosquitoes and those who understand the urban environment.
It's a consideration in pest control and public health. Maybe someday we'll have urban designers who know how to protect us from these city mosquitoes. Laura says that if we want to stop them and not get West Nile virus, one thing we might do is make sure there's plenty of air flowing through our buildings, because mosquitoes are fairly weak flyers and can get blown away easily. Lots of researchers are doing basic science to move us towards solutions like that. And they're interested in the ways mosquitoes and other insects are adapting to cities. A few months ago, I got to visit another place where this kind of investigation is going on. I went to a fountain in Philadelphia on a very windy morning. Statues of stone frogs, turtles, and swans shoot streams of water into the air. I'm wearing knee-high rubber boots, and so is my guide, Isa Betancourt, an entomologist at Drexel University's Academy of Natural Sciences. We're here to collect bugs. She has a small net, like the kind you might use in a fish tank.
Let's hop in. Ready?
Yeah.
So now I just wander around and look for bugs.
When she finds one, she scoops it up.
We found a ladybug. This is a fly. It's called a surfeit fly. This is a milkweed bug.
Oh yeah, another surfeit fly. Here's another wasp.
Probably a male wasp.
After about 15 minutes of this, it gets a little cold.
How are your fingers doing? Mine are freezing.
She collects the bugs in vials of chemicals to preserve them.
I've had school kids think that I'm collecting all the money in the fountain. I've had some of them say, "She's stealing our wishes." And I'm not stealing wishes. I leave the money there.
So why is she doing this? She's studying how pollution in the city is changing the bug population. The jets of water in the fountain are like a giant insect trap that lets Isa see what bugs live in or pass through Philadelphia. She's building a library of insects so that someday, researchers can use her samples as snapshots in time to track the way insects may be adapting.
If we're only finding things that are really that are good at dealing with pollution, that's not a good sign.
Isa says it would be a pretty big loss if we only have the bugs that are pollution resistant and we lose the ones that can't adapt.
It's sort of like the canary in a coal mine situation, where if the sensitive insects cannot exist, then we should probably change something, because I know I want to exist in a place that's more healthy.
One entomologist told me urban spaces are kind of the only habitats that are really growing right now. That makes understanding cities important. While coral reefs and rainforests aren't getting any bigger, there will be more people living in cities in the future. And studying the evolution of urban animals gives us our best idea of what our future world might look like. For The Pulse, I'm Alan Yu.